Hello, welcome to another episode of Enviro People. This is our second episode ever, and I am joined by a very special guest, Mr. Johns, who is the Vice President of Environmental Services and Land Management of Nevada Energy, NV Energy. Yeah. So yeah, thank you so much for coming out. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here, and you can just call me Matt.
Matt, yes, okay, Mr. Matt. What does your organization do?
So NV Energy, we're the utility serving most of the state of Nevada. In southern Nevada, we serve Las Vegas and most of Clark County. In northern Nevada, we serve Reno, Carson City, and most of the central and eastern Nevada.
Very nice, thank you. What does your position actually entail?
So my current position, I'm responsible for all the environmental permitting and compliance activities related to the company. That would include all of the permitting, managing our air emissions, our wastewater management, and our water management for all of our power generation facilities, but also all of the permitting obligations around our infrastructure, such as transmission lines that cross over federal lands in the state of Nevada. So that has a permitting process to it as well. On the land side, all of this infrastructure requires land rights, whether that's easements or right-of-ways, to construct those facilities to serve customers in Nevada as well. So it goes together in that manner.
Very nice. So you just kind of like mitigate everything to make sure everything's going right?
That's right. All right. All of these projects require, most of them require some form of environmental type permitting in and of itself.
That makes sense, yeah. Very cool. What made you interested in this career?
Couple of things. When I think back when I was in high school, I actually had a job doing mosquito control in Colorado. And that program was trying to address things like encephalitis that can infect people from mosquitoes or be transmitted in that manner during certain times of the years. But the program didn't use pesticides or chemicals. We actually used a bacteria to treat the larva in the water that was very protective of the environment as well. And that combined with just my interest in water and the environment, I chose a career path that my undergraduate was actually in civil engineering with an environmental focus. Back when I was in college, they didn't necessarily have an environmental engineering program at that moment in time. And my master's degree was in agricultural engineering.
Oh, fun.
And that was very much focused on using, my research was using wetland systems to treat wastewater in and of itself, to treat wastewater and nutrient loading and helping clean up the water that way before it's discharged to the environment as well.
So you have a very good background on your job, huh?
Yeah. It's been part of my career.
Yeah, definitely. Very cool. Why do you think what you're doing is important? What do you think
is
a big deal?
In my prior role, prior to joining NV Energy, I was a consultant for 20 years. And in that role, I worked for many different types of businesses and industries, from the federal government to private industry, and NV Energy was a client. And my focus there was heavily focused on environmental remediation, trying to clean up issues that occurred most likely in 30, 40, 50 years ago. That, these were what people understood at that moment in time on how to handle things like waste, how to clean water, things of that nature. We know a lot more today than then, and so it was exciting to be able to come together from a scientific perspective and an engineering perspective to come up with solutions to remediate sites so that they could be reused for an appropriate purpose, but also clean them up to a certain point that's very protective of human health and the environment.
There you go. That's very cool. Yeah, definitely very important, because we do need to make sure that we can still use the land that we got. So very cool. How have you seen your work benefit the environment?
Yeah, so currently with NV Energy and in my current role, I oversee and help oversee our corporate goals and our projects that help us are meeting some very, very big goals in the state. When you think about climate matters that we're all dealing with right now, like decarbonization, for Nevada, we're one of the leaders in helping the state decarbonize. So you think about the power utility sector is a major sector in the carbon environment. We have a goal and through state legislation that we would be 50% renewable by 2030.
Very cool.
And then by 2050, we're working towards being net zero carbon by 2050.
Wow, that's a big jump. That's pretty cool.
So, but to do that in your current role, we also have to go through a permitting process for projects to build things like renewable projects across the state. We also need to build the transmission lines and the distribution lines to bring that energy to keep the lights on here. We also have to do that in a manner that balances reliability. And what I mean by reliability is people use power, energy, electricity 24 hours a day. Some of the renewable resources like solar aren't on 24 hours a day. They're considered, they're intermittent resources. So how do you balance bringing those resources into your energy mix along with resources that are capable of operating during those nighttime hours like natural gas facilities? So it's a fascinating time. New technologies coming on board. Battery storage is something that in the state and we as a company are investing in as well to allow us to charge those batteries during the daytime hours where resources like solar is available and on, and being able to discharge that at night. Being able to do that is really one of the big challenges facing all of us in kind of the climate space over the next 30 years. So it's an exciting time for you.
It is, definitely. Yeah, I've seen throughout the years very much more solar panels and stuff being used, and I've always been wondering about that idea of, you know, sun only happens for however many hours in a day, and how are you going to, you know, use that energy efficiently to last throughout
24 hours a day. And that's one of the challenges. And I think ultimately there's an all of the above approach. When you think kind of really big picture regionally, that there's we use more energy today than we did 20 years ago. We have
a lot more people here.
We're also seeing changes that are kind of exciting in place. When you think about carbon reduction, you think about things like industry or power production, but it's also transportation. So you think about the other major sector that is carbon emitting, vehicles. There's been some recent legislation in Nevada that we're working through on transportation electrification. So you think about, well, how do you build that infrastructure to support that transition as well, to be able to charge a vehicle either at home or along the highway, things of that nature. So it's really kind of a cool time to think about how does that all come together? And really, it's a bit of an all of the above approach.
Yeah, you do have to use everything you got going.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I've seen a lot more companies, a lot more electronic vehicles like getting up there, and a lot more charging stations and whatnot to try to make sure everybody can use their electronic vehicle. So, super psyched to see new stuff going about.
That's right.
Alrighty. Where do you think NV Energy is going in the future? Like, how do you think it's...
Yeah, like I talked about before, we are very focused at reaching kind of that net zero goal by 2050. And along the way, though, we're trying to balance some other matters. When I mentioned reliability, that can everything be just a renewable project right now if we still have to be able to meet those needs 24 hours a day? And so, like, even recently, we've received approval to build what we call, they're part of our natural gas fleet, but they're peaker units. And those are natural gas-fired generating units that we intend to operate only a few hours a day during the peak of the summer. So those critical moments that we need it. Our larger natural gas plants don't ramp up and ramp down as quickly, but if you think about solar power starting to fade as the sun sets in the early evening, you do need to be able to ramp up quickly and respond to those needs as well. You also face challenges like with renewables. And for us, we're very rich in solar. You want geographic diversity in that. So when you think about, well, can we put concentrate all of our renewables in one location? It may not be a great idea because cloud cover, for instance.
Oh, that's very true, yeah.
So in the middle of the day, if you think about this, let's say all of our solar is only in one location and the clouds came over.
Yeah,
just for a few minutes. Yeah. Just for a few minutes. And we have, you know, Las Vegas operating, and we didn't turn off our air conditioners for those few minutes. You don't store electricity in the same way. But those are the fun challenges
that
scientists and engineers that we're all working to solve right now.
That's so very cool. Yeah, very interesting. So what type of energy are you guys mostly using right now? Like what?
So right now our fleet is largely comprised of, like I said, we have a renewable portfolio, which we purchase renewable power, and we're able to build some of our own renewable projects now as well. And that's primarily solar and wind is kind of the resource right now. Then we have our natural gas fleet that operates, that provides that load during that balancing load as well. And I've been involved in retiring our coal-fired generation in Southern Nevada when I joined NV Energy. And we're working, we have one coal-fired plant in Northern Nevada that we're looking to cease coal-fired generation by the end of 2025.
Oh, awesome. That's
so
very soon.
Yeah, we're making some very great difference.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome.
If you kind of put it to a kind of a metric that people talk about, like the Paris Accord, things of that nature, and you hear about carbon intensity, we're greater than 50% our carbon intensity as a state in 2005, and that's kind of the amount of carbon emitted compared to the generation that's produced. Our intensities, we've reduced that by 50%.
Wow, that's
while,
a lot.
While producing more power. So
that's insane.
We're able to produce more power today with 50% less carbon emitted.
That is so cool. That's,
yeah.
that's really
As a
inspiring,
factor, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so.
That is awesome. That's really inspiring.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of moving into the more renewable idea, I guess, in NV Energy and trying to make it more less carbon emissions, better for people, better for the environment. Yes, very nice. How do you feel about the younger generation being involved in environmental activism?
For me, it's a wide space.
Yeah.
And when I think about activism, it's kind of a broad term as well. So what I think is really important, if those are that are interested in the environment and protecting the environment, I kind of look at my career. I wasn't one to be an activist in the sense of I'm going to protest something.
Yeah.
I wanted to use kind of my education and my background to help identify solutions and work with people and kind of be at the table and try to develop a kind of a balanced solution, not only environmentally, site remediation or, you know, energy and energy transmission now for me, but what's in the best interest of the communities that are nearby and involved. And in the case of energy, it's also in the best interest of all of, of our customers, all the energy users.
Yeah,
here.
Definitely.
So you want to be able to balance that out. And a lot of the programs today, when you go through a permitting process, encompasses that. So if we're building a transmission line to access renewables, and that's crossing federal lands, you'll go through a process called the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. And that process is looking at all of these factors together, from cultural resources in Nevada, tribal resources, biological resources, plants, things of that nature, visual impacts. How does that impact the community? Yeah. And then public input as well. And this is a federal process that we go through. The Federal Land Management Agency oversees that in the state, but it's trying to come up with a, let's just say, a balanced solution that fits and tries to best balance everybody's interests as well. So if you think about, you know, let's say we're building a solar plant, you know, rooftop solar and all that's very important to it, and that's part of the overall mix, but the amount of energy that's being demanded as well from what we as consumers of energy, all of us here mm-hmm. today, we large-scale solar is also very important to us. Well, that's getting a little bit further away from urban areas that are using the energy, so you have to build transmission lines there.
Gotcha.
And that's where you try to find that balance that it's in the best interest of the communities, it's in the interest in best use of that land,
mm-hmm.
And it's protective of important environmental resources, whether that may be biological resources or cultural resources, and try to bring that all together.
Yeah, sounds you guys have a big job of trying to make sure the best of every world, to make sure everybody's happy.
And I think for going into college, things of that nature, thinking about your career, there's a wide space to work with. I work with a range of folks that range from in the remediation side, geologists, geochemists, scientists of different nature, on the permitting side, folks that are kind of natural resource specialists, wildlife specialists, archaeologists, things of that nature. So it's a wide...
Yeah, a big crew. Yeah, definitely. So, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Environmental activism is definitely a broad idea. So you definitely can go from protesting and stuff to what you're doing is creating solutions.
I think about career, it's important to hear all voices too.
Yeah.
That's that if somebody feels strongly about a certain matter, that's important that they bring that to the table and bring it in a meaningful and constructive way as well. So it can be really informative to coming up with solutions.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it's important to hear people protest, just so you know that everybody's kind of on the same page, doing stuff, but also very much needed education and to make good solutions to...
That's right.
To get stuff done, yes.
Problems that we all face.
Exactly, very much so. Okay, would you consider yourself an environmental activist? I kind
of... In the sense of, protesting, I just haven't fit into that space. I've really always been just fascinated by problem solving.
There you go.
And coming up with what may be that best overall solution to things. So... I think, that's afforded me the opportunity to kind of bring my education, my skills, my background, and be at the table with those discussions as well. So in that sense, I probably don't fit that mold.
Yeah.
But in terms of kind of my interest in doing things that really benefit the environment and allow us to still, utilize the environment in a responsible manner, that's kind of where I fit in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I definitely feel more or less now we're talking more like protesting and stuff as environmental activism, but a lot of people work behind the scenes like you do of actually creating solutions and helping everybody out to create a better future for everybody. So that's very cool. In your opinion, what is the most pressing environmental issue that needs to be resolved in the future?
Oh, there's lots of opportunities.
Yes, exactly.
I think big things that are on all of our minds, carbon and reducing our reliance on carbon itself, and from an energy sector, providing and producing electricity, it's our ability to go through that decarbonization in a thoughtful manner as well. Well, everybody would like to be able to say, hey, we can turn off all the power plants and just rely on solar.
Yeah.
It's not quite feasible yet, but we have to come up, and we're working through that plan to meaningfully work our way through to kind of meet that state goal of 2050 in that sector. So carbon's one thing. I also think about water. I'm Australia responsible for the water rights in the company as well. And we here all live in the West, and we understand about water availability and thinking about that resource and what's the best and most responsible use of that resource is also a very critical matter. We talk a lot about the volume of water here living in the desert Southwest. I also think about the quality of water as well.
Very true.
Being protective of the water quality and the things that regulation and good regulation that was developed, Clean Water Act, things like that, have done remarkable things over the past many decades there. But we're facing new challenges today. If you think about products that we've produced, whether it's pharmaceuticals, things like that, that benefit us, medicines. Yeah. Well, how does that, you know, as we, that ultimately ends up in our wastewater that gets treated, you know, how do we treat that wastewater for those chemicals to protect our water resources or those the biology within those water resources?
Yeah, definitely.
So there's a lot of space out there as well.
They're very, big. Lots of issues happening around, but
if you ever, I don't know if you talk about it in class, but a lot of folks, you go, there's this triangle between water and energy and food, people.
Oh yeah.
And if you kind of contemplate how those three items kind of
connect
with each other, it's very important. We look at it, you know, from our view as you know, living in a very modern society, but we also have to balance this with what's happening in the world, and societies are in very different places.
Yeah, definitely.
As well.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool. So you said water and what was that?
Carbon.
Carbon. Yes, water and carbon, which kind of fall into also like the energy idea of making sure that you're not creating renewable energy, and making sure that if we're talking about treating our wastewater, we need to have energy to do so. So
we
here
do.
We go.
Yeah.
So, how can young people start getting involved in a career like yours? How did you first start out?
Yeah, so through college and my education, and there's a lot of different avenues that I mentioned, depending on where your interests lie. And then there's just a little bit different, focus areas on it. I've been involved more in the engineering side, but it's not necessarily engineering like I'm going to build a building well. It may be from environmental remediation, it's about soil cleanup, it's about this. You know, we may be using bugs to clean up the petroleum or the solvents in the subsurface, like that. So there's a kind of environmental engineering side, but you're equally working with biologists, geochemists, geologists.
Yeah, definitely.
In that space, kind of coming up with solutions as well on that space. And as I said before, if you expand into the permitting side, you have people that are very specialized through their education in air, water, you know, a lot of that comes through civil engineering or agricultural engineering on that space. But also the other sciences, biologists, natural resource, wildlife folks, things like that. When you talk about big projects and how does that all fit together, you know, in the state of Nevada, if you think about important resource or biological resources, let me ask you, what critter do you think is pretty important in Southern Nevada that gets talked about a lot?
A lot.
Just came out of its winter rest.
I don't know.
The desert tortoise.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you think about land in the desert tortoise in Southern Nevada that if we're building a project, we need to make sure we're not impacting that tortoise as a protected species. So we may relocate tortoise if the project is approved and there's a tortoise that exists there. We will build tortoise fencing to protect them so they're not in harm's way either. But we do that kind of work. And on the plant side, if there's yucca or anything like that, they're important plant species, we'll have to relocate those species into a nursery and then transplant them at a different point in time. So you work with a lot of different people.
Yeah, sounds like it. You guys have a very big process of having to
So there's a lot of different avenues depending on what your interests are on it. So it's kind of a neat space, and there's a lot of things that are going to be changing through your generation and your career
definitely,
as well.
It's definitely more of being more aware of what's going on, and I feel like there's going to be more opportunities for more education in specific avenues. Yeah. As you said, that there wasn't necessarily environmental engineering, but now you see that that's more of an opportunity for people.
Yeah, engineering, environmental science, core sciences.
Yeah.
That's kind of where a lot of the folks that kind of are working in the career kind of come from.
Yeah.
So
very cool, very nice. Do you have any recommendations on how young people can protect our earth?
I just professionally or career-wise, we talked about a lot of different types of career paths. And then I think personally is like your own personal choices on you know, how you want to be mindful of your own personal impact to Earth. And that's really, you know, you have to balance that with, you know, your finances and your income and all that. You know, right now, like an electric car, well, it may not be affordable for everyone, and there may not be the resources, and that's perfectly fine there. But maybe recycling may be very important to you personally as well, that I'm going to do really focus on doing the best I can in that space personally. So kind of think of it in those two ways, both professionally, it's a very exciting time, and then personally, it's kind of an exciting time to be involved, you know, and in your community. I do think it's important that you stay involved personally in processes and projects, like I talked about, to understand and learn and appreciate you know, everything that's going on around you as well. So you know, it's great to, there's public scoping meetings that happen all of the time on projects, and you can just be more informed.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is a big thing, that people just be more aware of what's happening and be more curious and interested about what's happening. Absolutely. So thank you. What can people do differently or continue to do, do you think? Like, what do you think that maybe people should be doing differently?
Let's talk about kind of my current kind of where I'm, what I currently do. I think about two things from a personal level. There's being informed is really important. Mm-hmm. And even on your use of electricity, that you kind of understand there's opportunities to conserve, and there's great programs. There's great programs with NV Energy on energy conservation efforts as well. And that's opportunities for you to do. Same on water. We live in the desert Southwest. Yeah. And being mindful of how we personally utilize water, whether it's in our landscape or, you know, when we use our dishes or things of that nature as well. But, you know, being in tune with all of that, I think, is just one area that we can just think about in you know, opportunities to do things a little bit differently. That may just make a little bit of difference.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Every little bit counts. That's kind of how I see things. Definitely in the big scope of our environment, because everything impacts everybody. So every change is a little bit for the better, then it would be that much better. Yes, that much better going on forward. But yeah, thank you, Mr. Johns. I appreciate it. Thank you for the interview. Thank you guys for tuning in for another episode of Enviro People. We had Mr. Johns here today, the Vice President of the Environmental Services and Land Management of NV Energy. So we hope to see you guys next time on our next episode.